You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, we're getting down to it. Tomorrow is Election Day, although a lot of people, you know, most, I think in probably most states, people are already voting. And in many states, people have largely already voted, like the vote-by-mail states. Or many people have voted. There's a lot of stuff on the ballots, but I think the most interesting thing that is happening in this election is that this is the first time that the billionaires and the big corporations have really figured out how to use Citizens United. And you have to ask yourself the question, and this is something you will not see on any national television network other than Free Speech TV. You will not see this. There may or may not be a discussion about it on PBS. There certainly was not on NPR this morning on Morning Edition. It was the third day in a row that they've promoted Cory Gardner over Mark Udall in Colorado. It was just mind-boggling. Last Thursday, Mara Liasson was talking about Cory Gardner's not really that right-wing crank you think he is. Well, actually, he is. It's a lie, what Mara Liasson was saying. And then on Friday, which was the last day to mail in a ballot in Colorado, if my recollection is correct, Morning Edition, NPR's morning show, said, well, let's go talk to a Republican. And they talked to a nice Republican who talked about how wonderful Cory Gardner was and how they had just voted for him. And then this morning, again, you know, they said, well, not, you know, today was supposed to be the day they talked to a Democrat, right? Well, they just talked to some guy. Or a couple of people. Well, what do you think about Mark Udall? I mean, literally, the person didn't say anything. They changed the subject. What do you think about Cory Gardner? Oh, he's a farmer, you know, and our food comes from the ground, and we all need to be voted. No, Cory Gardner's a right-wing crank. He's about, you know, he was swept in. He was part of the Republican Tea Party 2010 sweep into the House of Representatives. He voted to shut down the government. He has sponsored a fetal personhood bill. Which would cause women, if they have miscarriages, to have to report to the police department. That's who Cory Gardner is. But NPR's not going to tell you that. But anyhow, the big question in my mind, and I think this is the biggest question of the election cycle, is how much money is being put into these races? Where's it coming from? Where is it going? And why? Washington, D.C. has become the best investment in the country. And state houses and now judicial races, a close second. If you're worth billions and you want to be worth more billions, invest in politicians. If you're a big corporation, I mean, in California, you've got literally the oil industry trying to buy a community, basically, you know, buying the political infrastructure of a community. There's this, but the really big story, I think, is this mind-boggling flood of money that is coming in at the last minute. And that's that, you know, I started this whole thing out by saying this is really the first election where they've figured out how to use McCutcheon and Citizens United. They did it, you know, fairly aggressively in 2012 and got a number of Republicans elected. But this time it looks like, you know, American democracy is just plain old flat out for sale. Thanks to our Supreme Court. And what's astonishing is that there are still candidates who are saying, I'm not for sale, and there are still people who will vote for them. What's astonishing is that the Koch brothers can spend several hundred million dollars, and their buddies probably $1 billion, $1,000 million in this election cycle. And yet they may not win everything, but they're going to win a lot, and they're going to win enough for them. To make sure that their taxes aren't raised, to make sure that there's no tax on carbon, to make sure that the fossil fuel industry preserves The fact that you send $523 a year to Washington, D.C. to redistribute to the coal, gas, and oil companies, whereas you only send $7 a year to redistribute to solar and wind and development of other alternatives? That, in my mind, is the really, really, really big issue. And nobody's talking about it. Nobody's talking about money in politics. There's Nick Confessore and Derek Willis wrote a great piece in the New York Times yesterday. It's titled "The Flood of Late Spending in Midterm Elections from Murky Sources." And they're talking about how there are all these super PACs. I mean, literally dozens, maybe hundreds of super PACs. Some of them have been in existence since the beginning of the year. Some of them were literally created last month. And if you didn't raise any money by, I believe it was October 15th, it was sometime in October. October 15th. If you didn't raise any money before October 15th, that's the last time you have to report before the elections, because you report on the 15th of every month. So what these groups do is you get some cranky billionaires or Karl Rove or the Koch brothers and their various front groups, and they create these nonprofit organizations. You and I are helping pay for them. And they don't put a penny into them until October 16th. And then they pour hundreds of millions of dollars into them. And these groups go out and spend hundreds of millions of dollars to influence elections. And we will not know who these people were who are spending all this money to influence elections until after the elections. Now, what's so mind-boggling about this is that on the one hand, you've got, you know, more than half of Americans, more than half of eligible voters, more than half of registered voters are probably not going to vote. So it's like, you know, and by the way, this is one of the consequences of negative advertising. When you do negative campaign advertising, it doesn't, you know, Joni Ernst and Bruce Braley, I believe, are in Iowa. No, Braley's in Colorado. Okay, so you've got Braley versus Gardner, for example. So if Gardner runs a bunch of negative ads against Braley, it doesn't cause Democrats to say, you know, I think I'll vote for Cory Gardner. Instead, what it does is it causes them to go, they're all crooks. Screw it. I'm not going to vote. Negative advertising drives down the electorate. It drives down the number of people who are showing up. This is from the New York Times yesterday. Others formed earlier in the year but remained dormant until recently, reporting few or no contributions with the FEC, only to unleash 6- and 7-figure advertising campaigns as Election Day draws near. They tracked, you know, $20 million in just the last couple days. One late-spending group known as BPAC, registered at the Washington address in September, has spent $2.2 million on election advertising in Colorado, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, and New Hampshire. They come right out and say the efforts are a byproduct of court rulings like Citizens United and lax enforcement by the Election Commission and the IRS. At least 90 political nonprofits, super PACs, and outside groups did not spend any money until the beginning of October. Among them are 18 groups that did not even exist in September and have collectively spent $9 million as of last Thursday. There's just this explosion of money. So on the one hand, you've got voters saying, it's not a big deal. On the other hand, you've got billionaires and big corporations saying, it's a huge deal.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, it's very simple. Why would the Koch brothers, why would all these billionaires, why would these big corporations, why would the Chamber of Commerce spend hundreds of millions of dollars? Because there's a lot at stake. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. And Stephanie, watching Free Speech TV in Kankakee, Illinois. Hey, Stephanie, what's up?
Hi. I was watching the debates in Illinois, so I guess the governor debates, Rauner and Pat Quinn. And it was really odd to me that, okay, Pat Quinn asked him about job creation and how many jobs he has created in Illinois. And he said he has hundreds of companies. And Rauner, he said he had told Rauner to name one. Rauner couldn't name one. He couldn't name two. He was stumped.
Huh.
Completely stumped. And he couldn't name any companies he runs. And then the senator race, Oberweiser, says he wants to only raise the minimum wage for people over 26 if they're in college only. No one deserves to get minimum wage raised if they aren't in college or under 26.
Yeah.
So I hope Illinoisans come out to vote because these two people are just crazy as crazy can be.
Yeah, yeah. And that second issue, you know, what happened to the idea in the United States that work has dignity? Even, you know, even if you're working in the sewers, even or particularly, you know, something we all use ultimately. You know, we used to believe in this country that garbage collected, everybody had the right to, you know, a decent wage, that if you worked hard, it didn't matter what your IQ was. It just depended, you know, if you worked hard and kept your nose clean, then you could earn enough money to raise a family. And that has just, you know, since the election of Ronald Reagan, that has completely gone by the way.
Well, one thing that they did, Oberweis mentioned was too many people are getting starter jobs and then trying to live on them. And people are trying to tell them, like, and down in Kankakee, a lot of small towns, St. Anne, had one store. It caught on fire. There are nothing but starter jobs in small towns. So what are people supposed to do?
Right. Yeah. And this is because of, you know, Reaganomics and free trade policies. All our good manufacturing jobs are now in other countries. Not all of them, but the vast majority of them. And most of the stuff that we buy is made outside the United States. And so when consumers go out and become job creators by buying things, when they drive the engine of the economy, what they're buying is stuff that's from other countries. So ultimately their money is not stimulating the U.S. economy. It's going overseas. This should not be rocket science, but it's really, really remarkable. And, yeah, Stephanie, you are in Illinois. Are you seeing just like wall-to-wall election advertising on television?
Oh, God, it's mad. But the thing is we're only seeing the Senate and governor's race. Some of the smaller races, we're not seeing any of those ads at all. And I'm kind of wondering, have they been priced out of the market? Because there are one or two, but mostly it's only the rich that are running ads here.
Yeah.
And it used to be, you know, anybody who was running, you saw something from them. We're not seeing anything. And I really don't get it because I don't get it. So money is playing a huge role.
Yeah.
And we may have a Republican governor who's a Mitt Romney, and this state will be completely different. We're just getting on our feet.
Yeah.
Right. And well, I mean, Kankakee, there's tons of business opening now. I mean, there every week there's like seven businesses that are just building right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. Stephanie, thank you for watching Free Speech TV. Thank you for calling. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This money in politics thing. Here again, back to this New York Times piece. A network of five super PACs, all registered in Virginia. Right. In other words, this is, you know, lobbyists, people out of D.C. But with names like Alaska Priorities, Colorado Priorities, Iowa Priorities, was formed in early October, each listing as treasurer a former aide to Senator John Cornyn of Texas, the second highest ranking Republican in the Senate. And it just goes on and on and on. It's like this piece in the New York Times by Nicholas Confessori and Derek Willis. And my apologies if I'm mispronouncing Nicholas's last name. A flood of late spending in midterm elections from murky sources. Then there are 146 ballot initiatives in 42 states that will be consequential. They will affect your life. You've got a bunch of states, Alaska, Arkansas, South Dakota, Illinois, that have on their ballots to raise the minimum wage, which is something that arguably is going to help Democrats running in those states. Legalizing pot, that'll be in D.C., Alaska, and Oregon. You've got background checks for guns are going to be voted on in Washington State in the wake of a deadly school shooting there. This could be very interesting. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, and the flip side of this. Yeah, no, I'm not. Alabama's Amendment 3 would say you have a right to bear arms and you can't pass any laws against that. So, on, you know, in Washington State, they're saying let's have background checks. In Alabama, they're saying not that you can just buy your damn guns. Go out and shoot the place up. Have a good time. Three states have basically fetal personhood bills or constitutional amendments on the ballot. Laws that would ban IUDs. They would ban many types of hormonal birth control. They would shut down all the abortion clinics. They would shut down a lot of family planning, Planned Parenthood centers. They would require women to present themselves to the police department if they have a miscarriage, or allow them to be prosecuted if they had a miscarriage and they failed to present themselves. These are three states. If a woman goes to another state and has an abortion, she can go to prison. Even if it was in the first week of her pregnancy. There's a measure in the North Dakota ballot that it would ban future constitutional amendments that might support the environment. Both Colorado and Oregon, Prop 105 and Oregon's Measure 92, labeling GMO foods. And Prop 47 in California would reduce the number of people in prison. So there's some consequential stuff here. And then New York Times, again, another article, Montana judicial race joins big money fray. Judicial races have been evolving into another political background for big money. A last-minute surge of spending brought the total spent on television commercials to $10.2 million in 10 states. Spending race has been fueled by, guess who? The Republican State Leadership Committee. Why are they buying judges? Because judges rule on laws. You know, courts are the last defense that we have against the billionaires and the big corporations. They don't want you and I to have that defense. But I'm telling you, and there's a nice piece over on Alternet, this by Steven Rosenfeld, titled Eight of the Biggest Election Lies This Year. Number one, Scott Walker is not a feminist. No, he's not. Number two, Cory Gardner is not a moderate. No, he's not, regardless of what NPR says. Number three, Republicans are not the party defending Social Security. No, they're not. Karl Rove wants you to believe otherwise. He's actually running ads accusing two different Democratic senators of wanting to cut benefits, Social Security benefits. Why? Because at one point in time, they supported President Obama's suggestion that we have a chain CPI, which doesn't cut benefits. It slows down the rate at which they grow. But it's, you know, basically the same thing. And now Mitch McConnell is out saying, oh, I never wanted to privatize Social Security. Well, yes, he did. He's lying. David Perdue in Georgia is running an ad saying basically that Michelle Nunn, the Democrat running for the Senate in Georgia, was like trying to fund terrorists. She used to work for a group called Points of Light, a charity that is all about volunteerism. Remember George Herbert Walker Bush's 1,000 Points of Light? That's what this is. I mean, this isn't Bush's, but it was a volunteer, you know, promote volunteerism organization. And one of the groups that got some of their money was an Islamic group. Not jihadists, not, you know, just, I mean, Christian groups got money, Jewish groups, but. Says this is, in Hunter's case, federal and state law enforcement agencies say he made it up, right? California Congressman Duncan Hunter, this is ISIS. California Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter says that we've captured ISIS terrorists on the border, which is a lie. And Greg Abbott, the Texas AG who's running for governor, said there's 3,000 murders on the border, which is a lie. They're just making this stuff up. Down in Louisiana, the NRA is running ads saying that Mary Landrieu wanted to take away your gun rights. No, she didn't. She's been sucking up to the NRA all these years, voting for them, voting on their side. But, you know, she's a Democrat. She's not good enough. They need to get a crazy in there. Republicans are even saying they don't like billionaires spending money.
Right.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
But in my opinion, the biggest issue of our time, and it's not being covered by any of the news media, is that we are sliding into what is essentially fascism. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Net neutrality also, you know, there's so many issues of significant consequence before us. And, you know, when I said, as I went into the break, I said, you know, I think the biggest story is that we're sliding into fascism. The problem with using that word, and I use it very, very sparingly and carefully, is that when you say fascism, most people think Hitler. And Hitler was not a fascist. Hitler was a cult leader. The Nazis were not, they were not fascists. Early on, perhaps, when Hitler was aligning himself with the big industrialists in Germany. But once he got power, fascism was invented by Mussolini. The fasce is a bundle of sticks with a rope around it. There's one in front of the speaker's table podium in the Senate, United States Senate. And the fasce, it was the symbol of the Roman Republic. And the idea was if you have one stick, you can break it. But if you have a bunch of sticks, you know, with a rope around them, holding them as a bundle, you can't break it. You can't break a whole big bunch of sticks. And so, you know, together we have greater strength. And so Mussolini's idea of using the symbol of the Roman Republic, keep in mind Mussolini was running Italy, which is where Rome is, and was the headquarters of the old Roman Empire. His idea of fascism was merging government with business, merging government with people of great wealth. He actually closed Parliament and for 5 years replaced it with what in Italian was referred to as the Cameo di Fascio Corporationes. Forgive my lousy Italian. But the chamber of the fascist corporations. So what he would do was in every, you know, their equivalent of our congressional districts, every congressional district, instead of the people electing someone, the largest corporations in that district would appoint their representative. And these are the people who ran the country. And so when I say we're sliding toward fascism, that's what I'm talking about, is this merger of corporate and billionaire money with the power of government. There's a reason why the Koch brothers are spending hundreds of millions of dollars. There's a reason why Karl Rove is spending hundreds of millions of dollars on behalf of people like the Koch brothers. There's a reason why the Chamber of Commerce, on behalf of big corporations, many of them not even doing most of their business in the United States, are supporting Republican candidates by and large. And the reason is very simple. It's an investment. It's an investment in a country that where everything works to the advantage of billionaires and corporations, and to hell with the average person. We are the suckers of the world. You know that? The citizens, the voters, the average working people in the United States, we pay the highest internet charges, we pay the highest phone bills, we pay the highest TV charges, we get the lousiest service. We have very little diversity in our media. Our political system has been bought and paid for, thanks to the Supreme Court. I mean, we are the suckers of the world. No other country would run themselves the way that we're running our country. We're the only developed country in the world that doesn't have a national healthcare system. We're one of the few developed countries in the world that doesn't offer free college education and trade schools to anybody who's a high school graduate. We got $1 trillion in student loan. No other country would even consider that. We are the suckers of the planet. Why? Because our political system has been bought off by billionaires and big corporations. And now they're buying our schools and privatizing them. They want to buy Social Security. They want to privatize that. Mitch McConnell's already tried once. He will try again if he becomes the Senate Majority Leader. It just goes on and on. It's really, really grim. And I one of the things that I really committed to when we started this program back a decade ago when Louise and I started this program was never doing complaint radio. And I'm dancing up along the end. I hate complaint radio. I just don't like listening to somebody complain. That said, I think we need to acknowledge where we're at, and we need to figure out how to get out of this place. And how do we get out of it? By declaring that the Supreme Court, which is largely responsible for this mess, the Supreme Court was wrong when they said that corporations are persons and protected under the 14th Amendment. And the Supreme Court was wrong when they said that spending money is the same thing as speech and is protected by the First Amendment. Spending money to buy politicians. They were wrong. And they have devastated this country and this Democratic Republic as a consequence of it. And the billionaires and the fat cats, the big transnational corporations, they're just more than happy to waltz in and buy this country. They got the money. We certainly don't have it anymore. Only 30% of Americans now have a job that actually pays all their expenses and allows them to live a lifestyle where their kids can go to college. They can end up with their, you know, owning their own homes, take vacations, all that, you know, all that stuff that used to just be, this is the American dream. It used to be normal before Reaganomics. It's now only a third of us. And the other two thirds of us are sliding deeper and deeper into debt, wiped out, tapped out, and particularly in some places and in some areas with debt that can't be discharged by bankruptcy. You cannot declare bankruptcy on student loans. They will follow you till the day you die. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind?
Tom, I saw an interesting story on my local news last night about 11 o'clock at night, and they said that there was some kind of new application, maybe smartphone application or something, somehow tied to Facebook, where you can look up where your friends and neighbors are voters or not, whether they voted in the last election, and you can send them little messages or something and say, get out and vote, stupid. Some of the people were really angry about it. Some of the people said it was a good idea. I don't know. You know, what's this all about?
Well, this is something I've been pitching for a couple of weeks. Both Republicans and Democrats are using this as a campaign tactic, pointing out to people, we know where you live. We know if you voted or not. And it's using social pressure to cause people to say, oh, really? Well, I guess I'll behave myself. I guess I'll vote. People tend to behave well when they think that they're being observed. And I think that that's actually a good thing. We've, you know, one of the big challenges we have in this country is that not enough people vote. And if everybody knew that whether they voted or not was going to be a matter of public record and their neighbors could check it out easily, then I think, frankly, you'd see voter turnout probably go up 10-20%. So
well,
that's.
I think they were telling me it is being done. It apparently.
Well, there's this Judd Legume posted a piece over on Think Progress about how the Republicans are doing this in Iowa now. The GOP is trying to convince Iowa voters on Facebook that their neighbors will know if they voted Republican. Now, that's something that they don't actually know. They don't know how you voted. They just know that you voted. But the Republicans, you know, lying is like the way Republicans roll, you know. So the screenshots of Facebook ads promoted by the official Facebook page of the Republican National Committee feature an ominous message, quote, notice, all voting is public. In a few months, Iowa will release the list of individuals who voted in this election. And then they have an aerial view of a neighborhood with check marks on people's houses that say, these people voted GOP. And another one, this is, didn't vote. Don't let this be you. Right? And it's just, I think that this is something that we should be doing nationwide. Ed, thanks for the call. Steve in Rochester, New York. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to talk to you about a number of things you just were talking about. The writing of propositions has always bothered me. The way that they write them up, the lawyers write them up, and most people get so confused reading them that you don't know a lot of times you'll vote the wrong way of what you feel because of the way the proposition.
Well, this is like the personhood amendment in North Dakota. It simply says, you know, life is we shall respect the sanctity of life at all stages of development, which sounds innocuous. You say, yeah, of course, I'm all in favor of human life. I like life. But, you know, what it means is that by the definition of this constitutional amendment in North Dakota is that in North Dakota, once a woman and may not even be actually pregnant, right? A fertilized ovum has not yet implanted in her uterus, has not yet begun the process of becoming a zygote, and yet under this law, she's considered pregnant. She's considered having a life, and if she takes a birth control pill that produces a menstrual period, that's an abortion, and she could go to prison. I mean, you're absolutely right. A lot of these amendments are just bizarre in the way that they're phrased. John in Warren, Ohio. Hey, John, got a minute to the break. It's yours.
I'm actually on the ground in Iowa helping out with District 51 here with Laura Hufka, and we're going to win our race because she got on the ground 3 months ago. You were correct. Bruce Braley is running against Joni Ernst, and that's okay that you don't know that because 50% of Iowa doesn't know that. Democrats really? Are trying to play and trying to use this same template that the Republicans are by spending as much as they are, by inundating the media market, will not work. Republicans can irritate their base as much as they want, and they're going to show up. What I'm getting from doors from Democrats and from independent voters is I've been getting 5 to 12 phone calls a day for 3 months, and I'm sick of it. You guys don't represent me anyway. I'm not voting.
That's what people are saying. Yeah.
That's what people are saying. They're fed up with this, Tom.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I can actually get a few minutes with them and explain to them what's happening with the money in the system right now and how a candidate has to pander to people outside of chambers when they come out, you know, the lobbyists that have their $40,000 and $50,000 check.
Yeah, we need to be making people into activists, not acknowledging their...
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Not acknowledging their despair or their lack of activism. Say, yeah, you know, it's a mess, and therefore we need to elect good people who are going to unmess it. John, thanks for the call. Good luck. And welcome back. John, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Fonda, Iowa. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. A long-time viewer, first-time caller.
Thank you.
So I'm a little nervous here.
It's okay.
But let me shut this darn thing down or it's going to mess me up. But what I was going to say is that I've got a chance to talk to both Bruce Braley and Joni Ernst. And Joni Ernst will not be voting with Mitch McConnell. Joni Ernst will be voting for, what's that other crazy guy, Kim?
Ted Cruz,
yeah. That's who she'll be voting for. I asked her about minimum wage, okay, because that seems to be something, you know, everybody should raise the minimum wage. She said, it's a state issue. I said, so what do you think about the state issue of that? She said, well, I don't think they should raise the minimum wage. I said, well, that's, you know, like $15,000 a year. Could you live on $15,000 a year? And how much does your bus cost you out there? And then I asked her about gun, because she does always carry a .48 with her. You know, she always points that out because it's her baby. So I don't know. I don't understand. When I talked to Bruce, I said, why don't you talk about the minimum wage? Talk about the 15 good, great things that Obama has done. Why are you running away? And that's kind of how it's getting here. And I don't know. I think our ground game might be a little better, even though normally in Iowa, that it's usually the older, more conservative people that come out and vote on election day. But I don't know. Maybe it's just the people that I talk to. But I did get a chance to talk to Joni Ernst, and wow, her and Tim Cruz, her and Ted Cruz. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. If she gets into the Senate, I mean, what we're looking at the possibility of happening is rather than just having two or three Tea Partiers in the Senate, we're looking at, you know, four or five Tea Partiers, six or seven Tea Partiers, and that's enough to really, really flip the Senate. And you got that plus, you know, two decent progressives, Sherrod Brown and Bernie Sanders. And it's just this flood of right wing money. It's making this country, it's running the risk of making this country, you know, unrecognizable. It's just amazing. John, thank you for the call. Natalie, watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network in Houston, Texas. Hey, Natalie, got a minute to the break. What's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. You control a man's mind. Control a man's mind, and you control the man.
Right.
And that's, you said money and politics is a dangerous mix. Well, there's another element to that, and that's religion. Most of the people I know, and I work in public transportation and been doing it for 24 years, and most of the people I know consider themselves Christians, and they, when you talk to them about voting, God's going to handle it. When it comes to abortion or to gay rights, most of them just shut down after that on a religious basis.
Right.
They are taught that God's going to handle it. God's got your back. I heard John Hagee telling the whole congregation, you don't need the government. You don't need this and you don't need that. All you need is God. So I'm sitting and wondering how many of those people in his congregation won't go vote because they're going to let God handle it.
Yeah. Or will vote because they want to vote for a Republican who will do God's will. Natalie, thanks for the call. It gets even weirder, right? I mean, we're talking about the Senate, we're talking about the House of Representatives, we're talking about governor's races. And on Saturday, John Kasich, the Republican governor of Ohio, who I believe is running for re-election, I could be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure he is. He was introduced by Ohio Supreme Court Justice Judith French. Right? She's a justice on the Supreme Court, and she's up for election. They elect the Supreme Court justices in Ohio. And this is what she said. Quote, whatever the governor does, whatever your state representative, your state senator does, whatever they do, we, the Supreme Court justices, we are the ones that will decide whether it is constitutional. We decide whether it's lawful. We decide what it means, and we decide how to implement it in a given case. So forget all those other votes if you don't keep the Ohio Supreme Court conservative. You get that? A Supreme Court justice saying, vote for me, I'm a conservative, I'm a Republican? It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Eric in Strasburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Eric, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Just some quick numbers I pulled offline. The top 1% in earnings in the U.S. is $380,000 a year, and that might be a 2007 number. So
yeah, it's in that neighborhood. It's just short of $400 a year gets you into the top 1%. Right.
Right, and like you know, $1 million a year. I think the threshold is 0.3%. So roughly 3 in 1,000 Americans are pulling down over $1 million a year, which is a little higher than I would have thought. But in any case, some of the other numbers I see online is like a U.S. congressman's salary is about $175,000 a year, whereas a senator, I think it's about $190,000,
right,
which is roughly half of the threshold to get into the 1%. My question to you is you always hear, you know, congressmen and senators, you know, quote unquote, being in the back pocket of big business or special interests. How does it benefit them? Like Bob McDonnell, of course, famously is going to jail for, you know, accepting just minor things like golf clubs and iPhones. And,
well,
you know, Richard Nixon, as you yeah, famously pointed out, you know, had to defend Pat's cloth coat like 50 years ago. But how do you think the money is actually getting to them, or how is it benefiting them? It almost has to be malfeasance or bribery on some level.
Yeah, over the short term, while they're in office, what the money does is it allows them to have power. In other words, it gets them reelected. Once they decide, I'm not going to be elected anymore, or once they get kicked out, their having been in power gives them the ability to become a lobbyist. And lobbyists in this town start, if you're a member of the House of Representatives, you start $1 million a year. If you're a former senator, you started around $4 million a year. Depending on who you are and how high your profile is, it can go up from there substantially. So,
why are they clutching on to their job so much? Wouldn't it benefit them to, you know, serve a term, maybe two, and then go out and make the gobs of money, you know, being a lobbyist or working for a special interest directly? I mean,
yeah,
when Dick Cheney closes the door behind him with energy companies, I mean, Dick Cheney's already worth, you know, $60, $80 million or whatever it is. But, I mean, how do you suppose money is getting to them directly? I mean, what's in the politician's best interest?
The principal way that these guys make money is speaking fees. They'll show up and give a speech to, you know, a Chamber of Commerce group, for example, and the Chamber of Commerce will write them a check for $200,000 or $100,000 or $50,000 or whatever, you know, whoever they are, how high the profile is. This and And this is something ex-presidents do, too. Bill Clinton made a lot of his millions in speaking fees, and so did Hillary. And so it's not, this is not, you know, limited just to Republicans. It's all over the place. But that's, you know, the principle. Or they'll write a book and they'll make a lot. You know, Barack Obama became a millionaire because he wrote a couple of books that sold really well. So, you know, there's a variety of ways that they can get their own cash. But there's something about power that's just as seductive as money. They're I think, in many ways and for many people, virtually interchangeable. Eric, thanks for the call. George in Chicago. Hey, George, what's up?
Well, thanks for taking my call, Tim. What you said earlier in the show about NPR really resonated with me because once upon a time, I was a loyal, everyday listener of NPR and WBEZ in Chicago and a regular contributor. But as we moved past the year 2000, we began to detect that NPR wasn't as straightforward or trustworthy in my eyes as it had been in the past. And progressive radio came along and I switched my radio stations pretty permanently, but I still occasionally listen because Terry Gross does good work and Bob Edwards on the weekend and NPR on the media on Sunday are still good shows. But I was listening Saturday morning to their morning national newscast, and they did a piece on Kathy McMorris Rogers, Republican congresswoman from Washington State. She's the fourth-ranking Republican in the House. She chairs the House Republican Conference.
Right.
And anybody listens to this interview, you would be very disheartened as to what a patty cake softball puff piece this interview was. There was no questioning about how many times she'd voted for sequesters or government shutdowns, how many times she voted against out-of-work Americans getting unemployment extensions, how many times she voted to repeal Obamacare. It was mostly about who she is as a woman and how she works hard at relating to the women of Washington State.
Yeah.
And you got no sense whatsoever of where this woman stood on policy. And then yesterday at the top of the hour newscast, they had a brief interview with Norman Ornstein of the American Enterprise Institute, asking him to explain why the turnout would be what it will be this year. And it was a very carefully crafted statement that's consistent with the Republican effort to diminish turnout over the past 40 years. And no mention was made that the AEI is owned by the Koch brothers and that Norman Ornstein is their employee.
Actually, I don't think the American Enterprise Institute is owned by them, but they help fund it.
Okay.
It's a nonprofit.
Yeah. The local election coverage tomorrow night, which used to be exceptional, is being broadcast from a bar, and their Republican source on the broadcast will be former Governor Jim Edgar of Illinois, who used to have a reputation as being a moderate, reasonable Midwestern Republican, but he has spent this campaign out on the hustings with Rauner.
Yeah, so now he's in the bag with the guys. George, thanks for the call. Thanks for the update.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you, and in the studio with me, Neil McCabe, conservative commentator, editor of the Guns and Patriots newsletter. Gunsandpatriots.com is the website. This is your principal gig, Neil, is the Guns and Patriots thing?
It absolutely is, but I'm a senior reporter at Human Events, and so from time to time I will weigh in at Human Events with the issues and stories of the day.
Yeah, okay. So conservative,
very conservative
magazine, website?
Well, I mean, the newspaper itself closed 2 years ago, so it exists as the website. Uh-huh. But it was the senior conservative national publication for 70 years.
Is that the
national newspaper?
Is that the one that William Buckley ran for a while? Or,
no, that's the National Review.
That's the National Review.
But, right. Of course, the great Ann Coulter started Human Events.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And she's still our legal editor, legal affairs editor.
The great Ann Coulter. Oh, my God. So, usually you come on here and you and I are beating each other up over something. I'm just curious, if the Republicans take the Senate, if the Republicans take a bunch of state houses and if they increase their hold on America and these judgeships. I mean, you've got like this Supreme Court Justice Judith French. She said, so forget all your other votes if you don't keep the Ohio Supreme Court conservative. Right. Just nakedly saying, vote for me, give me money. If all that happens and hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent to make that happen, how will America be different?
Well, I think on one level, for most Americans, it'll be absolutely the same. It'll be the same sort of, life that they've been. I don't see like huge changes, coming for everyday life. I think that really what we're doing in Washington, there'll be just a new group of lobbyists and a new group of people who will be looting the Treasury. And so it's like the old group that was connected with the Democrats, they're all done looting. And so a new group of looters who are associated with the Republicans, they'll come in.
But the possibility of somebody earning a better wage will vanish.
Well, I mean, right? What we're going to do, I mean, if the Republicans actually governed as they campaigned, you would see sort of this piano taken off the back of business, small businesses, independent business people, and you could actually see some economic growth and some job creation.
That's nonsense. That's nonsense.
I know it.
This show is a small business. I got no regulations that are crushing me. You have a business, your newsletter, gunsandpatriots.com. What regulation is crushing you?
Well, I mean, I worked for a newspaper that closed because of the Obamacare.
Come on.
Threshold. They had to get below. There were 30. The company had to get below 50 employees.
Obama postponed that for a year. That's what John Boehner wants to sue him over.
Well, I wish I could go back and get my job back. There's a tax burden. There's a regulatory burden. But I don't think the Republicans will actually lift that. I would hope that the Republicans would cut some of this debt but I'm not convinced that any of that's going to happen. I'm not really sure what's going to change.
It seems to me that what we will see is that the country will become friendlier to billionaires and transnational corporations. It'll become more hostile to students, to poor people, to working people, particularly working people who make less than $30,000 a year, particularly to working people who make less than $20,000 a year, or less than $17,000, I think, is basically 10 bucks an hour. And
well, I mean, what do you mean hostile to students, though? Seriously, I mean,
we have students in this country are $1.3 trillion in debt. Germany made it against the law for college to charge tuition.
How about these students saying, thank you, American people, for loaning me $50,000 so I could get a degree in Renaissance poetry? There's a lot of people who don't have $50,000 loans from the taxpayers, who say, geez, I could have used 50 grand.
So you're defending our being the only major democracy in the world that has students $1 trillion in debt. College is absolutely free. It's free in Denmark. It's free in Sweden. It's free in Germany.
Why? I remember Clegg promised
that
it would be
Mexico.
Free in England.
College is free in Mexico.
Then why are so many foreign students coming here?
We have some very high quality, high status colleges, and if people want to go to those colleges,
so why aren't we all going to Denmark?
Well, there's enough rich people in the world to support Yale and Harvard. But there are people going to Denmark, actually, and there are people going to Germany.
Okay.
There are people going to the UK. Oxford is, you know,
if these foreign countries had it so great.
You're changing the subject.
I am.
I noticed. So, you know, how can
let's go back to the narrative. I don't want to chip away at your premises. I just want to say that the Republican wave that we are all sort of bracing for in the nation's capital is a function of structure, because they had such a horrible year in 2008. They only have 15 seats to defend, which gave them the advantage where they had to defend 15 seats in the Senate, and they could go on offense for 21. And so that had nothing to do with ideology or policy. That's just a function of they were so bad in 2008 that there's nothing for them to defend 6 years later.
Well, I get all that. And the Supreme Court has made it so that, you know, enormous amounts of money can come into these races, and they are. And it's pretty mind-boggling.
But, you know, are they going to repeal Obamacare? No. Are they going to restore spending to the Defense Department? No.
Are they going to privatize Social Security? Mitch McConnell has already once voted to privatize
it's not
Social
Happen.
Security. He worked with George W. Bush to do
that
in 2005.
Are they going to end sort of the neo-feudalism that we've set up with this farm bill? No.
Are they going to end student debt? Are they going to make it possible?
Student debt will be ended when these kids who racked up all these bills pay it off. Nobody put a gun to these kids' head and said, you must borrow $70,000 from the Treasury
What I think most young people were told and what they believed was that if they took on this debt and went to college, there would be a job waiting for them that would pay enough that they could pay off the
scam.
Debt. And it's
a scam.
It's an ongoing scam, and
what you're describing is a massive transfer of wealth from the American people to the colleges and universities.
That's right.
And then the students are holding the
colleges. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
so why do Republicans support
this? Harvard's endowment? Why do they even with their endowment? Why do they even charge tuition? If you have a $20 billion endowment,
again, you're changing the subject. Why would Republicans support a system where, I mean, before Reaganomics, right? Before Reagan became governor of California, if you were a student in California, college was free.
Sure.
I mean, Reagan ended that. And so when you graduated from college, when you got your first job, you know, within a couple of years, you could save up enough money to put down a down payment on a house, and you could start building equity.
Oh, listen, Tom.
People can't do that until they're 50 years old because they got to pay off their damn student loans.
I could work all summer and just about make what it would cost my in-state tuition in Massachusetts.
I did that in Michigan.
But people have no idea what I'm talking about. But what happened is when the government subsidizes demand, the prices go up. The prices of college has gone up every year. Because there's no downward pressure.
So what you're saying is that Republicans will change the student debt equation how? Because I disagree with your premise, but I mean
supply and demand. You disagree with?
No, I disagree with your argument that the government is creating demand for college. What's happening is that we have allowed for-profit colleges to prosper, and we've allowed a banking industry. The biggest thing that's driving college debt right now is the bankruptcy reform bill back in 2004, 2005.
Why? Because people can't bail?
Because you can't bail out, and so student debt is the new derivative creator.
I'd be willing to write off trillions of
dollars of derivatives based on student debt.
I'd be willing to write that stuff off and like give the guy, write off 30, 20,000, whatever you owe, and just pay taxes on it as income. I don't know why these kids feel that they can take money from the Treasury and not pay it back.
It used to be free. I mean, Thomas Jefferson started the first free college in the United States.
It wasn't free. They borrowed money and now they just don't want to pay it back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do know what you mean, but I think it's bizarre logic.
There's people who aren't going to college.
We're hitting a break here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Neil, hang on just a second, Neil.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Neil McCabe, gunsandpatriots.com is the website. Thank you, Neil. It's good talking with you. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Neil's going to hang out with us for a little while here. Let's take some calls. Dave in St. Paul, Nebraska, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey,
Dave.
Hey, Tom. Yes, we got a governor race going on here with three candidates. One's a Tea Partier, and he has produced a slick ad that has put a lot of production value into it, but it says nothing. Mm-hmm. Just that he's going to fix the problem in Washington. Okay, but they run it all the time.
Right.
In fact, they all run it back to back. And I could never figure that out until we're listening to you say it. I bet that the Club for Growth, which is his backer, has bought up all the time and all the channels.
Right, and they're doing that so that his opponent cannot run television advertising. That's happening in a lot of markets, particularly inexpensive media markets like, you know, rural Nebraska.
Perhaps, but gosh, you know, every channel, TLC, Comedy Central, MSNBC, everything.
Wow.
You also said the Democrats are canceling. The Democrats,
speak up.
Yeah, the Democrats are also canceling. They reserve time, and as they're sort of making their battlefield adjustments, they're opening up a lot of slots as they, sort of pull out of sort of contested.
But Republicans are not, because they're getting more and more money poured in literally by
I mean, now it's everybody wants to be on the winning side, and we're getting that sort of that momentum now that people are now jumping
into
the bandwagon.
I think this was just the strategy all along. You know, do you see this New York Times piece? Thanks a lot for the call, Dave. I it's good to hear from you. Thanks for watching.
Great bunch of kids at the Club for Growth, by the way.
Yeah, right. did you see this article in the New York Times? Flood of late spending. From murky sources, there's like 100 of these 501c3s that were created on October 16th, because if on October 15th you had any money, you had to report it.
Right.
And there's a whole a bunch of other ones that were created earlier in the year but had like $20 in their balance on October 15th that they report to the FEC. And then on October 16th, they're making literally $20, $30, $50, $100 million ad buys. So you know, some group of billionaires or businesses set these things up well in advance. I mean, at the beginning of the year, back, 10 months ago, knowing, or 11 months ago, knowing that at the very, this was the October surprise.
Well, you
this
can,
is the Republican
you can spend
October
a billion
surprise.
Dollars and still lose. I mean, Eric Cantor spent a lot of money and lost. Phil Graham spent a lot of money. I think he spent $12 million to get one delegate.
Yeah. I think the famous examples are in California, is Carly Fiorina and Meg Whitman. But,
or even Huffington.
Mike
Huffington.
Ariana's ex-husband. But they were all spending their own money. And people look at people who are spending their own money as like, you're trying to buy the seat, really? And, you know, it worked for Rick Scott, but it typically doesn't.
Well, it's kind of chicken and egg, too, though, Tom. I mean, there's the one idea that, that you're trying to bribe a politician, but you take a group like Club for Growth. They're trying to support people that agree with them.
Right. They want billionaires to have lower taxes
but
and corporations to make more money and screw the workers.
Well, I didn't read that part about screwing the workers. But
you haven't looked at America recently? Only 30% of Americans have a job where they can have the standard
but
of living
said that, and there's nothing
that
wrong.
80% of Americans had in the 1980s.
And there are billionaires on the left and billionaires on the right.
There's no billionaires on the left who are doing anything even close to what the Koch brothers are doing. Tom Steyer has put the most money in, $50 million.
Sure.
The Koch brothers, we know, of $300 million. Bloomberg, $5 million. You know, and then people talk about George Soros.
And his
George
name
Soros hasn't supported a candidate since 2008.
Yeah, but he's still the great, he's the
boogeyman for Fox News.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be right back. Neil McCabe with us, gunsandpatriots.com. We'll be, stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. And Neil McCabe is in the studio with us. Gunsandpatriots.com is his newsletter. And you also write for, what is that, Human Events?
Humanevents.com.
Human Events. Ann Coulter's website? That's just...
Ann Coulter, we are the home of Ann Coulter.
Amazing.
And others.
All right. Well, it's like if you like, and I'm speaking to our listeners and viewers, if you like Neil's worldview, get ready. Because get out and vote today.
I don't know how conservative these guys are going to be. At a certain point, the Republicans and the Democrats.
You don't think they're
the same.
You don't think that they're going to try to impeach Obama?
There's no point. And it certainly won't happen with Boehner because
the base.
Because Boehner abhors confrontation, because he was part of the.
Is that why he's suing the president?
He never filed the suit.
Well, that's because the second law firm
about.
Has dumped it. But he raised millions of dollars on that.
If you're going to sue the president, why not impeach him? I mean, that's really...
My point.
Yeah, exactly. And so Boehner's just sort of looking for some way of, sort of pacifying the conservatives. Boehner was part of the Gingrich leadership team, and he's emotionally scarred from those battles between Newt and Bill Clinton. And so he's never going to really come. I mean, look what happened a year ago with the government shutdown. We're, you know, the conservatives tried to save this country from Obamacare. McConnell and Boehner.
I mean, conservatives tried to keep it where 40,000 people a year were dying because they lacked health insurance. Now we're down to 17,000 people a year dying because governors in red states won't extend Medicaid and give people health insurance.
Be that as it may.
How is that a good thing?
Be that as it may.
Well, no, how is that a good thing?
Without, I don't want to go into Obamacare. I just want to make the point.
Well, no, how is
that,
it a good thing?
That you said
Boehner, save America from
that,
Obamacare.
That which was supposedly part of the Republican platform. Okay.
Obamacare?
Getting rid of Obamacare.
You know who first introduced Obamacare on the national level? Richard Nixon in 1972.
And a deal that Teddy Kennedy didn't
take. Teddy Kennedy blew it up, yeah, because it wasn't single payer.
Sure, sure.
It wasn't
And so there you go. But Boehner, supposedly the Republican leader, supposedly this guy who's going to go toe-to-toe with the president, will not go toe-to-toe with the president. And so,
but he already has. I mean, look at the sequester. Look at the government shutdown. Boehner is refusing to allow a vote, for example, on extending long-term unemployment benefits. People have had their benefits cut off last Christmas.
Sure.
He's refusing to schedule a vote on comprehensive
immigration
reform.
These are
things that passed the Senate with bipartisan votes.
I think if Reid brought some things on the floor that the Republicans passed in the House, Boehner would agree to bring some things on the floor that passed in the Senate, and we could work together.
No, you know that's not true.
What's not true? Keystone won't be brought up in the Senate.
It is not.
National concealed carry will not be brought up in the Senate.
What is not true is that when Democrats do what Republicans want, Republicans say, "Oh, that's nice. I'll do what you want."
But that does not happen.
Republicans are playing for keeps.
A deal could be made where, you know, you've got your bills that pass the Senate that are sitting, you know, at the House door. You know, maybe you could do a quid pro quo. Maybe something could happen.
Well, I think actually that, you know, if the Republicans take the Senate, that will happen with Fast Track. That will happen
for the Trans-Pacific Treaty.
Yeah, I call it the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement. S-H-A-F-T-A.
It's the most horrific.
SHAFTA.
It's the most horrific bill that nobody has ever heard of.
That's right.
And it is.
We have NAFTA, CAFTA, and now they want to give us SHAFTA.
And I think many Americans would be surprised that treaties are now used as backdoor legislation, so that because treaties are senior to federal law. And not only that,
treaties are supposed to require 2/3 of the Senate for passage. You know, I think it was Nixon or Reagan, one or the other of them, he started reclassifying these trade agreements.
I'm not sure, but I just know that this is a horrible thing that's just full of all sorts of goodies for the entertainment industry.
When did
conservatives
become opposed to TPP? The Republicans are all over this thing.
Well,
they love it.
Well, conservatives don't like picking winners and losers.
Come on.
What?
You've never heard me say this before?
No, I say it every time I'm on with you.
I don't believe it.
Oh, I just have to check the box here, okay? Winners and losers.
You're saying, you know, you want to cut taxes on businesses, but B, you don't want to pick winners and losers. Won't businesses win, employees lose?
Not necessarily, not if the business is growing. I mean, no businessman wants to have less workers, right?
No, they want to have less pay for their workers. Look at McDonald's. Look at Walmart.
There's a lot of businessmen who take pride in paying their workers well and increasing their benefits.
And there's a lot who don't.
And a lot of Republicans are supporting the
winners of the business and the losers of
the
employees.
I would suggest that it's a good idea for businessmen to have happy, productive employees and take care of them. I mean, but that's their decision.
But your personal opinion is inconsistent with the official position of the Republican Party.
But throughout your business career, I assume you've had employees and you've treated them consistent with your personality and your values.
Typically, yeah.
And it's worked out well.
Yeah.
I mean, in circumstances.
But I'm not the Republican Party. And I'm not a conservative.
Well, thank God for that.
And you're saying conservatives don't like picking winners and losers.
I think conservatives
love picking winners and losers.
I think what conservatives are also concerned about is sovereignty and backdoor legislation. You're going to see a separation between the Chamber of Commerce and the Republican Party. You already saw
over TPP
and other issues.
For example.
Well, I mean, the farm bill was huge. You're going to see the Import-Export Bank. There's going to be a massive fight between the Republican Party, conservatives, and the Chamber of Commerce.
So we're dancing around the edge of the stuff. Ralph Nader just wrote a new book called Unstoppable. And he identifies 27 topics, 27 issues, where conservatives and liberals agree.
And I'm not surprised by that at all.
And his point was that if we, the people, were to elevate these issues, and, for example, free trade is one of those, in quotes, I think. I don't know. Maybe not, actually. I'd have to pull Ralph Nader's book out. But he identifies these issues, and you know, if that are basically populist issues. And
well, I think the problem is that, you know, you can be, everyone is for free trade in theory, but a free trade agreement shouldn't be 1,000 pages long. That's not free trade.
Yeah,
that's
3,000. No, it's heavily regulated.
That's
trade.
A bag of goodies.
Right.
So nobody likes a bag of goodies.
Yeah. Well, actually, the Republican Party does.
I will tell you, there's a significant faction of the Republican Party that is very concerned about these bag of goodies.
That's very interesting. Neil McCabe, gunsandpatriots.com. Thank you, Neil.
Good to be with you, Tom.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can check out Neil's website, gunsandpatriots.com. We'll be back with your calls. Thank you. Before the hour, talk media for the sane among us. Tom Hartman here with you. Neil has left the building, but the echo remains. I think we can already see to a certain extent what America would look like if the Republicans really ran everything. Oh, here's an interesting anecdote. Neil and I were wondering when this whole free trade fast track authority thing started out. And it turns out it was 1974. It was Jerry Ford, and it was, you know, he was following on Richard Nixon's opening to China and all this kind of stuff. So the first fast track was in 74. But Shane looked it up on the Wikipedia, and the Wikipedia page for fast track attributes it to FDR. No footnotes, no links, no nothing, just, hey, FDR. You know, the right wingers are just, they're constantly editing Wikipedia. It is astonishing. It's just astonishing. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to, you know, talk about propaganda, because you were saying that we were sliding into a, you know, possibly a fascist way here in our country.
I think we're already halfway there if you define fascism as the merger of government and industry.
Yeah, and I think that a good part of it, you know, as our country moves further to the right, from as a result of big money and the Tea Party, they're also, you know, they define the conversation, they control the flow of information. And I have to agree with another caller. I no longer give. I used to give faithfully to National Public Radio and Minnesota Public Radio. I give to neither for very good reasons, because even though, you know, they have public in their name, they still receive from the National Endowment for the Humanities, I believe, or the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, they receive money. And in this state, they receive money from the state. They do a really bad job, I would say. They are so limp. They follow, basically, I think, polls when they, you know, edit out certain issues. And one was just astounding. I just could not believe it. But it had to do with the Climate People's Climate March in Manhattan. And it was mentioned as a large march in Manhattan or in New York City, number one. And number two, on their webpage, it was the very last item. It was on the second page. It was not on the front page. Even our local newspaper had it as a front page story. And Winona LaDuke spoke to the United Nations. That was not covered at all, because there are certain people that just are not even acknowledged. You know, you wouldn't be. I'm sure they probably never invite you on to Minnesota Public Radio, their three-hour program that they have in the morning, where they talk to various people from different, you know, sides of the aisle, or, you know, various views. There are just certain people. They would never have Noam Chomsky on. They would never have Amy Goodman on. They just, you know, are as corporate could be. And if you look on their board of trustees, out of 29 or 30 board of trustees, 27 of them come from major corporations, and I realize they don't necessarily influence the, you know, everyday operation, but I'm sure, I mean, there must be a reason they don't have teachers, they don't have any members of unions on there. You know, they have moved so far to the right, along with the rest of our country, you know, moving in that direction. And there's no, often there's no reason for it. They could stick their neck out a little bit. I remember one time they were interviewing Noam Chomsky. They were interviewing Norm Coleman, you know, before he, you know, lost his Senate seat to Al Franken. And the same interviewer, you know, said to him, 3 years earlier, you know, they pointed out that the Iraq war, you know, was going to cost, you know, so much money. And Norm Coleman said, well, it'll just be absorbed by the growth of the economy. And they would not ask that question. And I asked them, I said, you know, that interviewer asked that, you know, asked him that question. Why wouldn't you, as a responsible journalist, you know, ask that question? And they get too close to these people, and they don't, you know, want to, I guess, you know, be too
They find themselves in the same situation, the same position that the national media does, which is that if the big names will not come on their programs, they don't have a show. And so you don't offend the big names, you suck up to the big names, you get along and go along. And it's a real tragedy. John, thank you for the call. Katie in Jamul, California. Hey, Katie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I really had a hard time listening to your right-wing friend there as a graduate of the California State University system in 1970 with extremely middle-class parents. And anyway, that's not what I'm talking about.
I don't understand how Republicans think that they can sell this stuff.
It gave me tachycardia. You may be hearing echoes. I'm hearing my heartbeat fast.
Huh.
And both my husband and I had the benefits of virtually free. It wasn't totally free because there were fees and books, and we worked for that sort of thing. And so our kids were able to go through because they worked, but we were able to pay this enormous amount of money at the University of California. That is just, it's heartbreaking, as we're a family of teachers. And, you know, it's just heartbreaking. But I called on Friday. I mean, I could get off on that and just almost get to tears because of the kids that my kids grew up with, who were smart, bright, eager, and couldn't go on to college and wanted to.
Right.
So I'm just, but I called on Friday. I called late, and your person there, Danielle, said maybe give you a call back, and I'm not exactly sure that I'm still on subject, but I have a question that I would like you to take up after reading your book of 2016 and the crash and, you know, having no doubts that, you know, I was right there with you on everything you said. We all were. And then you have sort of made mention of whatever president gets in, what are they going to do with this? So
right.
Now knowing that Jeb is doing the inevitable and his wife is Mexican, and that's, you know, just a huge step forward. He stole it for his brother. He can steal it for himself. What would a Jeb Bush presidency do with this tremendous crash that is going to come, as you say, possibly next year, but, you know, hopefully kick it down a year down the road. So what would that look like?
I genuinely don't know. I would not underestimate the possibility of a politician changing their behavior while not changing their rhetoric. It's what Reagan did. Reagan came into office talking about how he was going to lower the federal debt, and he tripled it. You know, he talked about how he was going to cut government spending, and he massively increased it. He talked about how he was going to reduce the number of federal employees, and he grew the size of the federal government in terms of employees larger and faster than any president in the history of the United States outside of wartime. So, you know, who knows? But the thing about Jeb Bush that we all have to remember is in 1998, the Project for a New American Century wrote a letter to Bill Clinton, President Bill Clinton, basically demanding that he invade Iraq. And that letter was written by and signed by, among others, Paul Wolfowitz, all the usual suspects, Donald Rumsfeld. But Jeb Bush was one of the people who was principally behind this. Jeb Bush was one of the guys who was pushing for war with Iraq in 1998, you know, 2 years before he, 3 years before his brother became president. And Jeb Bush is not some, you know, friendly guy. He's a hardcore neocon. And he stole the election in Florida for his brother. He had Catherine Harris knock 80,000 African-American voters off the voting rolls to get the election close enough to steal, or close enough to throw to the Supreme Court. Jeb Bush will do anything it takes to maintain power and to get what he and his corporate backers want. And the idea of a Jeb Bush presidency is truly frightening to me or horrifying to me. And as I point out in the book, The Crash of 2016, you know, we got hit by the Great Depression. So did Germany. Germany had a right winger as their chancellor. We had FDR, and the outcomes were quite substantially different. So elections have really significant consequences, Katie. And that's why it just blows my mind that so few people are participating in our elections. Katie, thanks for the call. Kathy in Madison, Wisconsin. We have a minute to the break. Kathy, it's yours. Thanks for listening to the mic.
I'll talk fast, Tom.
Thanks.
I think that this election is not about issues. It's about democracy, because the Koch brothers particularly and others have long dispensed with any need of democracy because it doesn't work for them.
Right.
And the Koch brothers have an ideology. That's what they live with. They're the most frightening, I think, of anyone that gives all the big money, because they have this ideology behind them. And I think that any Republican who's planning on voting for a Koch brothers candidate should definitely read the 1980 platform that David Koch ran under as a libertarian.
Right.
I searched the internet to see if they had disavowed that platform. All they said of it afterwards was that it was a little bit extreme and they couldn't win on it.
It's still essentially the Libertarian Party platform. No Social Security, no Medicare, no minimum wage, you know, basically no restrictions on corporate behavior, no taxes for billionaires. I mean, you're right. Kathy, you did a great job in a minute. Thank you very much for the call. Thanks for listening to 92.1 FM. We will be right back. It's 15 minutes before we leave.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So my question for the day, I guess, is, and I ask this of Neil, I'm asking it of myself and of you, if Republicans really take a lot of power, what will they do? And welcome back, Susan, in Sterling, Oklahoma. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. I think the Republicans will do anything and everything they can as fast as they can.
Yeah, I think so, too.
No bars, nothing there.
Katie bar the door, or whatever the phrase is, yeah.
Yeah. What's the three states that had the fetal parenthood on their ballot for tomorrow?
Didn't
list that. I was real curious, of course, being a woman.
Yeah, yeah. Hang on just a second. I've got the list here, because I want to get it right.
I had to agree with the teacher earlier. I get a little bit out, too, with Neil on the show.
Yeah.
You know, I understand supporting the other, you know, presenting the other side.
I think it's important for people to realize how extreme the other side is, and how that extremism can come across with a friendly face. And that's, you know, and the fact of the matter is that I don't want to personalize this to Neil, but the fact of the matter is that right wingers are constantly in our media. I'm constant, for example, on NPR. I'm frequently hearing Heritage Foundation, Competitive Enterprise Institute, American Enterprise Institute. These people who are actually, in many cases, to the right of Neil, coming on as, you know, respected and considered authorities, and nobody challenges them. And so I like to have them on this program so I can challenge them at least, and we can have a conversation. Okay, here are your states.
There's a shooting. Okay.
Your states are Colorado, North Dakota, and Tennessee.
Okay. But every time there's a shooting and a death, there is a family, especially if it's a bread earner to that family.
Yeah.
It becomes a nightmare because the victim's family has to learn how to live much differently with less money, it becomes an avalanche of emotions. And that's never brought out when everyone's sitting here, I want my gun. I don't want to deprive anybody of their gun, but you cannot ignore the victim's story.
I have no problem depriving people of their guns. You know, if somebody is mentally unstable, if somebody has no need for a gun, if somebody has, I don't want to say no need, but, you know, I think that, you know, particularly, we regulate speech in this country, right? You can't yell fire in a crowded theater is the famous example, although there's many more. We regulate speech. We can regulate guns. I mean, even if you accept the Supreme Court's position that the Second Amendment provides an individual right to bear arms, to own guns, which, you know, the Second Amendment arguably does not do. The Second Amendment puts it in the context of a well-regulated militia. In fact, the Second Amendment's the only one that has the word regulation in it. But
the other thing we never want to talk about is Social Security. Social Security insurance
right. Is
the only program that provides children. My father was shot and killed when I was six.
Ouch. Sorry to hear that.
The only program that provides money to families with children who, like I said, have no more of a breadwinner in the family.
Right.
Never. And so doing away with Social Security really is a big impact.
Yeah, one-third of Social Security payments are actually to widows, orphans, and disabled people. And, I don't know what Mitch McConnell wants to do with those folks when he privatizes Social Security. I'm guessing he's just going to, you know, it's the same response the Republicans have to Obamacare. Tough luck. Susan, thank you for the call. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Victoria Jones on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's going on? Where are you and what's going on?
I'm in the basement of the White House, but we can't do Skype today.
I see.
So I've got a few election bits for you, then I've got some other stuff.
Great. Go for it.
Okay. So Iowa State Senator Joni Ernst, who is running for the Senate, of course, against Bruce Braley, very conspicuously blew off Esquire magazine's Charlie Pierce when he pressed her on criticism of President Obama's handling of Ebola. She'd been speaking, and she called Obama a dictator who repeatedly oversteps his bounds, and then she said that he's just standing back and letting things happen. He's reactive, and with Ebola, he's been very hands-off. So Pierce nabbed her and said, what should he have done about Ebola? One person in America has Ebola. So she said, okay, you're the press. You're giving me your opinion. So Pierce said, it's not an opinion. Only one person in America has it. So she changed the subject and said, but he's the leader. He's the leader of our nation. What he can do is make sure that all of these agencies are coordinating together to make sure he's sharing with the American people he cares about them. He cares about their safety. Of course, he has appointed somebody to do that. You don't think he does, Pierce said. I don't know that he does. He hasn't demonstrated that. You don't think he's demonstrated that he cares about the American people. He hasn't. I'm done. So anybody else?
Wow. So Joni Ernst reveals herself as a right-wing crank, basically. She's Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, yes.
Or Louie Gohmert.
She is Michelle Bachmann. She is. She's Michelle Bachmann, yes, reanimated.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Michelle Bachmann is, do I have this right? She's having to leave the political stage because if she doesn't, she would be prosecuted for violations of campaign finance laws?
Well, I don't know whether she is having to leave for that reason, but she was certainly being investigated for that.
Right, yeah. Okay, so anyhow, on to other news.
On to other news. Vice President Joe Biden saying that he thinks that the Democrats are going to hold the Senate. I predict we're going to keep the Senate. Nevertheless, he says that the White House is prepared to give a little, and he expects congressional Republicans to work to get things done if they win control of the Senate. He also said, when asked about why this election cycle might prove difficult for Democrats, he said, the president and I have to figure out how to better communicate what's being done. That's part of the problem.
Wow.
Which was, I think, Frank.
Yeah, I think Frank.
Gerald Nader, Representative Jerry Nadler, Democrat of New York, with an eye on the Senate's lame duck session, is pressing the Senate to vote on a bill curbing National Security Agency authority, saying that we have the first chance in more than a decade to finally place some real limits on the sweeping, unwarranted, and at times unlawful government surveillance that many of us have fought against for the past several years. Now, he's a member of the Judiciary Committee, which unanimously approved the House version of the bill in May, and then the full House passed the USA Freedom Act later that month. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Pat Leahy's introduced a version of the bill, but some changes are expected before the lame duck Senate considers it. And of course, Senate Intelligence Committee Chair Dianne Feinstein is certainly going to want to weaken it.
Very interesting.
So that's what he's calling for. Meantime, very interesting. The Supreme Court today took no action on a closely watched case that challenges a key part of the Obamacare law and could limit the availability of federal health insurance subsidies for millions of Americans. And what it's about is whether the subsidies that are vital to the implementation of the Affordable Care Act should be available in all 50 states or only in some.
Yeah, only in those states that have set up exchanges,
which is
arguably what the law says.
Right.
Yeah.
So they could have announced it today, whether they'd hear the case. They took no action. Next chance for them to announce it is on November the 10th. So we'll see if they do anything about that.
Very interesting.
They also rejected an appeal from a public interest group, Common Cause, and four Democratic members of Congress who challenged the Senate filibuster as unconstitutional. The justices let stand a lower court ruling that said Common Cause and the lawmakers did not have legal standing to pursue the case. They were arguing that Senate rules requiring at least 60 votes to bring legislation to a vote violates the constitutional principle of majority rule.
Wow. But the Supreme Court said we're not going to hear this case because you can't demonstrate that you've been harmed by this.
Yeah, and the federal appeals court said the lawsuit was filed against the wrong parties. They brought it against Vice President Biden in his role as president of the Senate and against the Senate secretary, parliamentarian, and sergeant at arms. And Common Cause says it can't sue the Senate directly because that's barred under the Constitution's speech and debate clause.
Right.
So I think that's going to end up going nowhere.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Meantime, in Iraq has boosted security today amid major fears that ISIS is going to launch major attacks on Shiite pilgrims who are flocking to the shrine city of Karbala, as further reports are emerging of mass killings. It is a major holy day tomorrow. It is the anniversary of the martyrdom of the Imam Hussein. So they are very worried that ISIS is, because ISIS considers Shiites to be just
blasphemers,
heretics.
Yeah,
exactly. And it would be, from their point of view, a fantastic place to get them. I mean, it's just like shooting fish in a barrel to get them on their way to Kabbalah. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of Iraqi pilgrims from 20 different countries thronging Kabbalah.
Yeah.
So they're very worried about that.
And with good cause.
With good cause, yes.
Victoria Jones for the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Good talking to you. We will be back. It is we're coming up on the top of the hour here. We'll be back with Jim Dean, Howard's brother and the leader of democracyforamerica.com. We talk about the election and how America might change if the Republicans take power.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And Jim Dean is on the line with us. He is what's your title, Jim, with Democracy for America? The chair?
Today it's chair, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. It's always nice to have you on, Jim. DemocracyForAmerica.com is the website, one of the great organizations that I'm constantly encouraging people to go join and participate. I'm curious, what's going on with Democracy for America right now?
Well, right now we're involved in about 74 campaigns. We've been running a great program, as other organizations do, which is helping folks from around the country call voters in key campaigns. And if you want to call from the comfort of your own home, simply go to dfadialer.com, and we are calling in to key Senate races and key gubernatorial races. And right now I found myself in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I'm actually had to go outside the office because it's rocking and rolling for Mary Burke, and we're making a ton of calls and sending out a bunch of folks to do doors. So
that's great.
It's all about get out the vote, all about participation.
Yeah. Yeah. And meanwhile, I believe I saw this article over in the Daily Banter about how the Alison Lundgren Grimes' campaign is suing Mitch McConnell because just a couple of days ago they mailed this very intimidating thing that says voter election fraud or something like that, voter violation, election violation on the outside of the envelope to Democratic leaning voters in that state in Kentucky. And, you know, the efforts to suppress the vote, from that, you know, very naked stuff that Mitch McConnell is doing to the voter suppression efforts in states like Texas and Iowa and Wisconsin and whatnot. What kind of impact is that having on this election?
Well, it's hard to tell here in Wisconsin. I'm frankly really, I think it's pretty disgraceful, not only Mitch McConnell's email, but, you know, the remarks that were made by Joni Ernst in Iowa saying that, you know, your neighbors are going to know if you vote Democrat, as if this was some horrible thing. We need to have a society that encourages voting. I am absolutely thrilled with the work of William Barber in North Carolina and his great organization, as well as the great folks in Georgia who have really been going out and getting folks registered and giving them the tools they need to vote, even in what is a very hostile environment. But the fact of the matter is, one must take care of politics or politics will take care of you. That means we need folks out there to vote, and we need to be encouraging. And if you're not encouraging that, if you're a candidate for office, frankly, you're not fit to run for office or hold office.
Yeah, I agree. Motivation strategies are usually two parts. There's the carrot and the stick. The carrot, obviously, you know, if we could take back the House and we could hold the Senate, we might actually be able to get some things done and turn this country around. The stick side, you know, what will America look like if the Republicans take the Senate?
Well, there's a whole lot of other stuff that's going on, which actually gives me great hope, whether we take the Senate or not, Tom. I mean, we have a number of very close gubernatorial campaigns and could very well have four new governors, Democratic, pretty progressive governors, in charge of states. We have a number of state legislatures that we've been working very hard on that can be flipped this year, and the real change is happening in the states. That's where some bad things are going on, but it's also where we're seeing the Medicaid money being taken and the Affordable Care Act being promoted, where we're seeing the possibility of some measure of campaign finance reform or disclosure. A lot, and minimum wage, of course. So there's a lot of good things going on. And, you know, the Senate may flip. If it does, we're going to have to support and encourage the president to be strong in vetoing some of the ridiculous legislation that'll come out of a Republican-held Senate. But whether it flips or not, I think you're going to see some good changes coming out of the states, which will eventually bubble up into the rest of the country, the way that Social Security did when FDR started and other great programs.
Yeah. I mean, let us not forget that Harry Truman was president in 46 when the House and Senate flipped, and they pushed, flipped Republican, and they pushed Taft-Hartley through over his veto in 1947. And Taft-Hartley to this day is haunting us. It allows states to become right to work for less states and eviscerates labor unions. I mean, there's a lot of damage that can be done even when you have a Democratic president if you have a Republican controlled House and Senate so that they can actually pass legislation, particularly if they can get stuff passed a veto. I mean, this is a real danger, I think.
No, you're correct in that, and this is where the president is going to have to get in touch with his inner Harry Truman, because he will have a sizable number of senators to sustain a veto, no matter what, and certainly you know, we'll have a House that's not going to be, we may have a majority Republican, but even if it does, is not going to rule with a supermajority. So we need the president to stand strong. If he does not get a Democrat-controlled Senate or Democrat-controlled House.
Yeah, I agree. Which means, I mean, no politician can stand strong if the people aren't behind him, if the people are not active, which means that all of us need to go over to democracyforamerica.com and sign up and participate with this great group that you've been. The last time I saw you in person, Jim, as I recall, maybe you've been through our studios or on our show, since then, but I remember, was it in Oregon where you were doing a training? How are those going? These kind of workshops on how to get involved in politics.
Well, they've been going quite well. Now we did a little bit less of the weekend trainings this year and more of the sort of half day or full day action trainings for particular candidates and campaigns. I suspect next year we're going to be back more to the weekend trainings, about 20 or 25 of them a year. They're very powerful. They get a lot of good folks together to encourage activism, and that's particularly so in a lot of states like Alabama and Oklahoma, where we've usually gone at least once a year. So there's a lot to like there. There's some very big legislative elections next year in Mississippi, Tennessee, New Jersey, and especially Virginia. So I expect we'll be in those states and others next year.
Yeah. So that's great that you're still doing these things. And so if somebody's thinking about, you know, gee, I think I'd like to get involved, maybe I will take that tag you're at, and I'm going to go over to democracyforamerica.com and participate. What happens? What should people do? What can people do?
Well, there's certainly a number of tools there about supporting candidates, and I mentioned the DFA dialer that's going on right now with the day left before Election Day. But following that, we're going to have a number of petition tools up, and we also have that training tab where if you're interested in having a training come to your area, you can get a hold of us, and we'll get back to you, and we'll talk about some of the things that we need to do collectively. We pay for these, but we always need a little bit of help on the ground, and we can fill you in on kind of what that help is and how to develop a host committee, and so we can pull off a successful training and wherever anybody may be.
That's great. Are you at all working with people, teaching them how to become precinct committee persons?
Yes, their precinct organizing is part of the training program. In other words, it's part of the curriculum. And in some places, you know, there's a very good precinct organizing model going on right now. The state of Washington is a very good example of that. And others, maybe not so much, so we have to adapt a little bit. But the important thing out there is getting voters organized on an ongoing basis so that it's not just electoral, but it's also about changing in your communities, getting your community to support a higher minimum wage, getting it to ban fracking in states where that may be important. Communities can accomplish a lot. If I recall correctly, there may be still an arrest warrant out for George W. Bush in the town of Brattleboro, Vermont.
Whoa.
It was a very powerful message.
That's great stuff. Hang on just a second, Jim.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Jim Dean, the chair of Democracy for America, democracyforamerica.com. Thank you, Jim.
Tom, have a great rest of the day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Keep up the great work. And welcome back. Corky, watching Free Speech TV in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, what's on your mind today?
Oh, Tom, yeah, that guy you were talking to?
Jim Dean, yeah.
How dare him explain the kids. My son.
Oh, you're talking about Neil in the last hour.
Yeah, for taking out loans they can't afford. My son's been getting flyers in the mail from colleges since he was in 11th grade, and nowhere in those flyers did they mention the fact that you can't file bankruptcy against student loans.
Huh.
Nowhere did they mention that that's a debt you're going to have to pay for the rest of your life.
Right.
And if you don't pay those debts, you're going to have a harder time getting a job because that goes on your credit report. And
yeah.
they don't tell the kids that.
Right. And it's not just kids, by the way. There's a lot of adults. One of the folks in the chat room was talking about this.
Here, have some money.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of adults who are trying to increase their earning potential or just hang on to their jobs, and they're having to go back to school to do it. And the consequence of that is that they're in debt.
It's going to blow up.
Pardon?
It's a derivative bubble that's going to blow up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. They're making derivatives right now out of student loans, and because they're arguably more safe, more secure than housing loans. They're also making derivatives out of car loans, which is an amazing thing. So anyhow, Corky, thanks for the call. Good point. Michael, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Mr. Hartman. First off, or Mr. McCabe, it's nice to be misdirected. But earlier you spoke about Judith French, the lady who's running for re-election in Ohio's Supreme Court race.
Uh-huh.
If she thinks that the Ohio Supreme Court can make the law, isn't she wrong? If you have some hotshot law firm that can deliver an undeniable argument that baffles even a state Supreme Court, isn't it the lawyers that make the law?
Well, no. I mean, ultimately, the judges will decide. In fact, here's a statistic that demonstrates this. The Washington Times, the right-wing newspaper, did this analysis of how federal judges vote in, you know, decide cases that have to do with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. They found that, and this is from Ian Millhiser's piece over at thinkprogress.org, they found that, Democratic appointees ruled in favor of Obamacare more than 90% of the time, while Republican appointees ruled against Obamacare nearly 80% of the time. So judges are partisan. And, you know, judges are making these final decisions. Yeah, you could say that the lawyers are putting together the arguments, but I would say no, it's the judges. And that's why you've got right wing billionaires trying to buy judgeships.
Correct.
Not just trying to, succeeding. I mean, you know, it's
correct. But I do love Pap, Mr. Papantonio. Yep.
Yeah, he's great.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. And this is one of those stealth things that goes under the radar. I mean, back in the 70s, in part in response to the Powell memo, I believe that was around the time that the Federalist Society was created, which is this right-wing group for lawyers and judges. And now you've got about half the judges in the country members of the Federalist Society. And that's spooky stuff. I mean, this, and now increasingly we're seeing judgeships being thrown into no longer being appointees, but being elected. And the consequence of that is that the billionaires come in and say, here's some money to get elected. We'll be back. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Get active. go to democracyforamerica.com and show up. Denise in Chicago. Hey, Denise, what's up?
Well, Tom, I was listening to your the gentleman who was talking about how students or people take loans out and don't expect to pay them back.
Yeah, my conversation with Neil McCabe.
Yeah, well, Mr. Neil McCabe should feel fortunate that he had a forum to express that opinion, because it was so repulsive to me and such a, I don't even know the word. I paid off one school loan. I went back and got my MBA. I was involved in a company that merged with another company, unemployed. I'm 55. I had no debt. The only debt I had was my school loan, and I had the money in the bank to pay it back as long as I could stay employed. I lost my job. Guess what? Well, I'd no longer be able to say I'm not in debt. My school loan is the largest debt I have. Other than that, the other ones are very minor. But I went back to school, as you just mentioned, to help keep myself current, refresh my education so that I could build value with an organization. But Mr. Neal forgets to mention about other impacts and what's going on with hiring people, especially experienced people. If you're 55, you're priced out and you are assumed to be overqualified. I could go on. I don't want to ramble. I think you can probably articulate this better than I can, but it was repulsive.
Yeah.
And that gentleman should have something like this happen to him.
Well, I think it's important for people to realize that if you are offended by the positions that Neil took, it's all the more important to get involved in politics, because every Republican on every ticket everywhere in the country, or at least the vast majority of them, share Neil's worldview. You know, that's and it's like people who don't vote are empowering these Republicans. But Denise, thank you for sharing your story. I and for pointing out that it's not just kids. It's not just students. You're spot on. Thank you. Jason in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Jason, what's up?
Oh, hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
I would like to add that I'm also in soon-to-be underwater South Florida. I got some amazing pictures of the intercoastal coming up over the seawall and this high tide we've been having.
Wow.
Yeah, well, anyway, I called because I wanted to answer your question about what happens if Republicans take major power, say they take the Senate. What's going to happen is they're going to start trying to push their agenda, mostly through budgetary matters.
Right.
And they'll try to push things like defunding Obamacare, the TPP. Well, the TPP is something else, but then Keystone XL and all that stuff. And Obama's probably going to end up signing a lot of this junk. But what they're going to do is they're going to force President Obama to use his veto pen.
Right.
And when he starts vetoing things, then they're going to go on TV and label him as an obstructionist.
Right.
They have been obstructing for 6 years, and they're going to pull a George Orwell on this president and turn him into the obstructionist when it's what they've been doing for 6 years, and that's going to set them up probably to take the presidency in 2016.
Yep.
The media will facilitate it because the media is corporate-owned, and the corporate-owned media backs the Republicans.
Yeah, by and large. Or they back corporate Democrats. But I think you're absolutely right, and it is Orwellian. After 6 years of the caucus room conspiracy, I mean, what I'm seeing is that the caucus room conspiracy was brilliant and it has worked. That the idea of let's just destroy this guy's presidency, let's prevent him from doing anything, even the things that we agree with, we're going to prevent him from having any successes at all of consequence, and they've been able to maintain their discipline and do this with the single exception of those 74 days, legislative days, where Obama had a veto-proof or a filibuster-proof Senate, and the Democrats controlled the House. They've been able to do it, and it's just astonishing. It's just astonishing. Jason, thank you for the call. Philosopher X in Atlanta, Georgia, you are on the air.
Hello, Tom. Yeah, I'm calling to answer that question that you were asking me earlier about why people are not getting into the voting process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for one thing, I live here in the slave state of Georgia, So I see, and I'm African American, so I deal with a lot of African American issues here, the civil activists, but people are disenfranchised by the two-party dictatorship system. They're still in shock because they're godsmacked that their African American messiah turned out just to be another corporate shield. People in America see voting as an exercise in futility. Even in ancient Rome, the people put up with the evil perversions of the Emperor Tiberius, and he was a monster. They only revolted against their government when an even greater monster, the tyrant Caligula, came along, and then they finally decided that enough was enough, and they rebelled against their slave masters, also known as politicians.
Are you trying to equate Obama to Caligula?
No. Well, the last emperor of Rome, if you check it out, was Africanus. He was a black man. And so basically, when times get tough enough, they'll try to go outside the proverbial box to see if they can save a dying empire.
Yeah.
But no, Obama is a corporate shield because he gets paid by the corporations. And so,
oh, but he doesn't.
A lot of the things that are taking
place, he's paid by we the people. We pay his salary. He's not paid by the corporations.
Well, Tom, you know that when it comes to campaign funds, in order to win, 91% of the time, the one that spends the most money wins because I watch your show.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
So that means that you have to kowtow to the people who have the money, which are the corporations.
Well, he's not up for re-election right now, so hopefully that's a liberating thing for him. It's just he doesn't have what FDR had. He doesn't have a Congress that will go along with him. It's more like a Harry Truman kind of situation. And I just hope he starts channeling his inner Harry Truman. Philosopher, thank you for the call. 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And for the record, I think that Obama has done a lot of good things in his 6 years in the White House so far. Hysterical. It's a word I can't say on the radio, so I'll say bleeping, but you know the word I'm talking about. The website is yourbleepingpollingplace.com. And only don't put bleeping and put in the actual obscenity, the F-bomb. And it shows you plug in your address and it tells you where you can vote, which is really kind of sweet. But it's done with a lot of very humorous obscenity. So, anyhow, I saw that over at DU. Herb Scotty posted it over at DU. It's kind of hysterical. Anyhow, Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita. Thanks for watching. What's
up? First of all, when Republicans take control of both houses of Congress,
you mean if.
Bad things happen. Yeah, bad things happen.
Oh, when? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, Glass-Steagall was repealed. NAFTA was passed. Welfare reform, which eventually led to the Walmart business model. So that's what worries me. But I do have a question I want to ask you. What is the difference between the kind of libertarianism the Koch brothers espouse and fascism?
Mussolini's fascism? That's a good question.
Right.
There's a substantial difference in as much as fascism expands the power of government and views government as an instrument to be used to solidify and enrich wealth and power on the part of billionaires and corporations. Libertarianism arguably does the same thing, but does so by, or at least says that they do so, by reducing the size and activity of government. So, fascism is far more active, far more proactive in helping out the rich and powerful. Libertarianism arguably is, if they're proactive at anything, it's at screwing the average working person. It's just hurting working people. But
the type of libertarianism espoused by the Koch brothers is basically that. I mean,
it's pretty close. Yeah, I think you know your point is well taken. It's just that's the problem with the word. Again, you know, you say fascism and everybody thinks Nazis, and it's not about Nazis. It's about Mussolini and who was the guy in Spain who was the dictator in Franco? Oh.
Yeah.
Anita, thank you for the call. And very interesting question. Linda in Chicago. Hey, Linda.
Yes. Hi, Tom. May I say three quick thoughts that I have to voters?
Sure.
This is an extremely important election. I don't think people realize it. I know your listeners do, but still. Number one, connect the dots. If Democrats can do what others say can't be done, and that's come out in great numbers and regain the control of the House of Representatives and keep control of the Senate, President Obama will finally be able to accomplish the goals that we elected him for. He hasn't been able to do those things. It's not that he's incompetent. So we could finally get those things. He could finally get something done with help and get the Republicans out of the way. Then we can regain the confidence in President Obama because he'll have the Senate and the House to approve his bills. So let's blow the Republicans' minds. And then number two, don't be fooled if you think of yourself as voting as an independent. You can't vote for any Republicans, no matter how liberal they may sound, because Republicans are all forced to vote, most of them lockstep. So realize you're not voting for an individual. You're voting for a party because, for the most part, Republicans think as one mind. And number three, if you live in Illinois, don't let Rauner make a fool of you. He's a wolf in sheep's clothing. He's just trying to buy the election. Don't listen to what he says because he's a chameleon, and he will say whatever you want to hear in order to win an election. When Rauner says Quinn is making false accusations against him, don't believe him.
Yeah.
Quinn, please, whatever you do, vote for Quinn.
Well, and apropos of what you're saying, and in response, in rebuttal to the caller that we had just before the bottom of the hour who basically was picking on President Obama and saying essentially it doesn't matter. You know, this is the Republican strategy, and F. Sogol over at Democratic Underground laid this out in a post that's up right now. It's called Anatomy of a Rat Bleep. And he says, number one, a month before the election, tell everybody both parties are the same. Unwritten message, no point in voting. Number two, 2 weeks before the election, accuse every mainstream Democratic politician of being three-way corporate conservadems, dinos, who don't care about the voters. Unwritten message, no point in voting. Three, 1 week before the election, it's impossible to win. Look at all these right-wing polls and pundits. They all agree we can't win. Unwritten message, no point in voting. Number four, the day before the election, the machines might be rigged. Oh, no, they won't let us win. Unwritten message, no point in voting. And this is a very dangerous and toxic thing, this no point in voting thing. So I'm with you, Linda. It's really urgent. This is a critical election. It's going to determine a lot about the fate and future of this country, and as well as the state of Illinois. And so people need to get out there and vote. And if you're in a state or an area where you can do early voting and you can vote today, go for it. And otherwise, you know, tomorrow's the day. Linda, thank you for the call. John in Monica, Illinois. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I heard a couple of people earlier mentioning that they had noticed a rightward lurch to PBS and NPR, and I wanted to point out that rightward lurch started in 2005 when the Bush administration mandated that they have ombudsmen to make sure that both sides were heard, even if one side was a load of baloney.
Hmm.
I'd also like to point out that it's no coincidence in the Banana Republic revolutions that they seized the media outlets first.
Right. I agree. And I would point out, too, that it was Reagan who started the process of defunding NPR so that they started having to go hat in hand to big corporations and billionaires. And that was not a good thing either. I mean, people forget how
I think it was a funding bill for NPR where they put in that requirement for an ombudsman.
Yeah. People forget how recent this is. I mean, public broadcasting was created by Lyndon Johnson, if my recollection is correct, as part of his Great Society programs. So anyhow, John, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. which is an alternative, a progressive alternative. Michael in Chesterton, Indiana. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Tom, thank you very much for taking my call. You do great work there.
Thank you.
I'm out here. I'm hitting the bricks here for the Democratic Party. I'm a trade unionist, a union laborer. And it's just, it's just so disheartening to be a Democrat anymore.
And what?
It is. It truly is. It truly is. Even up here in this speck of blue, in this horrible state that I live in, to listen to the Democrats talk anymore, I mean, it almost sounds like I'm listening to a Republican. And, you know, there is no...
You're trying to tell me that you are a Democrat working to get Democrats out to vote, and you're finding that Democrats are saying that they don't want to increase the minimum wage, that they do want to privatize Social Security, that they want to turn Medicare into a voucher program. You expect me to believe that?
Tom, no. I needed you to tell me that.
Okay.
I actually did.
There is a huge difference between the parties.
No, brother, there's a huge difference, And to vote a to be a working man voting Republican is like a chicken voting for Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, exactly.
It ain't a smart move.
No.
But the Democrats, too, the corporate Democrats, the neoliberal Democrats, you know, the Wall Street cats, you know, if it ain't Bernie Sanders, I don't want to listen to them half the time, you know. And
well, these are, you know, whether they're corporate Democrats or whether they're Bernie Sanders, here's what you're voting for, right? The Republicans, right across the board, the Republicans, and plus you're voting for John Boehner or Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell or Harry Reid. You're voting for the leadership of the House and the Senate, because whoever controls, you know, the majority of votes in both those places is going to take it. John Boehner and Michael, thank you for the call. John Boehner and the Republicans against increasing the minimum wage, against increasing background checks for guns, against equal pay for women, against lowering student loan rates, against a path to citizenship, against climate change legislation, doesn't believe in man-made climate change, is in favor of Citizens United and unlimited donations, is in favor of a balanced budget amendment, which would just be a train wreck for this country, is in favor of lowering the top income tax rates on billionaires, is in favor of lowering corporate tax rates, is in favor of increasing military expenditures, is opposed to gay marriage, is opposed to abortion rights, is opposed to disclosing campaign donations, is opposed to labeling foods that contain GMOs, is opposed to incentives for renewable energy, and supportive of continuing the subsidies for the fossil fuel industry, is opposed to the legalization of industrial hemp, is opposed to the ban on importing ivory, and is in favor of requiring an ID to vote. I mean, this is the list. It's just, you know, that's the Republicans. The Democrats, on the other hand, Nancy Pelosi, for example, is for increasing the minimum wage, is for increasing background checks for guns, is for equal pay for women, is in favor of lowering student loan rates, is in favor of a path to citizenship for non-citizens, is in favor of climate change legislation, does believe in man-made climate change. I mean, this is from a letter, by the way, that Richard Green and Jesse Gordon wrote, is against the balanced budget amendment, against lowering the top income tax rates, against lowering the corporate income tax rates, against increasing military expenditures, in favor of LGBT rights, in favor of abortion rights, in favor of disclosing campaign donation. I mean, the differences are stark. They're absolutely stark, whether it's a conservative Dem or whatever. It doesn't matter.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
If your local Democrat isn't liberal enough for you, vote for them anyway, because their first vote is going to be for who the leadership is. There's a lot at stake here. Welcome back. And Lane, watching Free Speech TV in Blairsville, Georgia. Hey, Lane, what's on your mind?
Hey, okay, good point you're making there. And that's where all us Democrats have been. But we got to learn something from the Tea Party, our Tea Party friends. And you've talked about this. To get rid of the Koch brothers, you give them what they want. To get a progressive in there, vote Republican now. Because really, that last call is right. The Democrats, the regular Democrat isn't doing anything. 8 years has proved that.
That's not true. Lane, I've got to assume that I'm getting calls here from Republican operatives, you know, one after another. It's like, you know, get out the to discourage Democratic voters. Don't be discouraged. Get out there and vote. There is a huge difference between the parties. And these voices of, well, you know, they're not liberal enough for me. Well, then show up, damn it. Participate. Go to your local Democratic Party meetings and volunteer. Become a precinct committee person. Be the person who writes the platform for the party. Be the person who helps participate in deciding who gets to run in primaries. There is so much that you can do other than sitting around complaining, you know, or calling a talk show and saying, these Democrats are not good enough for me. Come on, give me a break. That is what Republicans want you to be thinking and saying. Republicans are desperate that you not vote. And you must vote. We must vote. Brad in Boise, Idaho. Hey, Brad, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Long time listener, big fan.
Thank you.
I was going to address the comment an earlier woman made about the comparison with fascism and the Koch brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Parenti has written on it, and he calls it corporate fascism.
Right.
I would
prefer to call it corporatism, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, corporate fascism, or fascism in a pinstripe suit is how he puts it so delicately.
Yeah.
And it's when Madison Avenue tells us what to buy and what to think and why we should be buying these things and using up all the resources.
Yeah.
Basically. As far as voting, I'm an independent voter. I've been voting since I was 18 years old. I'm now 53. I am extremely liberal and progressive now, living in a state that is, well, lost. The statistics are this. The more conservative you are, the more apt you are to vote. That's the problem. With voter roll sitting around 40% or less, the most of the people that are voting are conservative. And that's why you get the dominance. In order for us to take back what we need to get back and get to even a more moderate government, we need to get up there in the 75% range.
Really, all we need to get is to 45 or 50. You know, it doesn't take that much. It's just, you know, people need to show up and vote. Brad, thank you for the call. Yeah, I'm with you. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes. It's 10 minutes before the end. Tom Harmon here with you, 10 minutes before the hour. Yesterday, Saturday, I was in Grand Rapids. I gave a talk for the Coptic organization's big annual hoop-de-doop there. And then I stayed with my brother Steve, and we went down to Lansing and visited my brothers Stan and John and spent, you know, Sunday together. And then last night I flew home, and planes got delayed, and I got home I finally got to sleep about 2:30 this morning, I think. So if I seem to be not quite all together here, that's why. Anyhow, Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
No, Tom, so you've just returned from Michigan as well.
You were in Michigan, too?
I just returned myself.
Wow.
So let's talk about what the Republicans will do. They'll do what they've already been doing on the state level. In Michigan, it's a great example. Michigan, Tom, I don't know if you noticed, but the roads are so bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if they will ever recover. They've made so many cuts and cut taxes so badly. I don't think they can actually raise enough tax revenue going forward to fix the roads. By the time they get done, they'll be started all over again. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
The rail of your dental work loose.
Yeah.
Drive on those
Yeah,
roads.
96 and 94, yeah.
Oh, and yeah, and the surface roads are even worse. The freeways are at least have federal funding. But the surface roads are even worse. The other thing is, Michigan now last in the country in elementary school assessments on mathematics. Well, last compared, Mississippi's last, but that is the floor. So Michigan is down on the floor with Mississippi, or Mississippi is the floor. So they're left because, what, $1 billion out of the public education system has gone to charter schools to serve 140,000 students.
Wow.
60% of the charter schools in Michigan rank in the lower 50% of school ratings.
Right.
60% of the charter schools are in the bottom half of the bottom half of school rankings.
But they're making money.
This is what the Republicans have in plan. I think what they want to do, and Bernie Sanders, I think I heard on Friday, they're going to write in riders onto the budget to cut Social Security and Medicare. I think what they're planning on doing is having this country's infrastructure and education system crumble into dust.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're absolutely right, Paul, and that's the end game, small government, no government, let the billionaires run everything, let the corporations run everything.
You know what was interesting, Tom? This is the problem. Making friendly conversation to people, I said, boy, what is with your roads? And people would say, well, I don't know, what's wrong with our roads?
Right.
I'd say, you don't get it?
Yeah, they've not driven in another state.
Exactly. And so it's slowly the frog in the slow boiling pot.
Right.
People don't realize that their entire nation is crumbling beneath their feet and they don't get it.
Yeah. It's happening.
We're turning into a third world country.
Yeah. It's happening all over the country. And it's not just our physical infrastructure. It's also our intellectual infrastructure, as you correctly point out, our schools.
They don't realize that either.
Yep.
Yeah. They don't realize that their schools are terrible, too.
Yep. I'm with you. Paul, thank you for the call and thanks for the observation and welcome home. Robert in Phoenix, Arizona. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you? I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you, Robert.
And, I thank you for letting me on your show. A couple of things real quick. That guy that you had on earlier about the student loans is an imbecile. You know, our student loan system is so broken. I've had to declare bankruptcy twice, and each time the bankruptcy court would not let me discharge my student loan. So right now I have $74,000 hanging around my neck that I can't get rid of, so it's denying me my right to be able to participate in this economy allowing me to buy a house, start raising assets. And, it's wrong. Like I told your screener, the only way that we're going to be able to fix this student loan system is if we burn it down. If we sue in the courts, if we get a class action lawsuit by a bunch of student loan debtors and sue under the 13th Amendment for involuntary servitude and peonage, this is the only way that we're going to be able to overturn this travesty of a student loan system that we have right now.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to say is that the Arizona Republic today was reporting that the Republicans in Congressional District 9, which is Kyrsten Sinema's district, which I'm a PC in, are currently leading in the polls. And we have early voting here in Arizona. But how would the Arizona Republic know that the Republicans are defeating Kyrsten Sinema? To me, that seems a little ominous.
Yeah. You know? Well, the only way that they could know would be exit polling. And, I don't know if anybody's doing exit polling anymore. Or it could just be the message that Republicans are trying to get out to everybody in America right now is don't bother voting, right? The Republicans are ahead. They're going to win. Don't bother. But you should bother voting. You should go and vote. Robert, thank you for the call. Brian in Matthews, North Carolina. Hey, Brian, we got 1 minute to the end of the show. It's yours.
Oh, thank you, sir. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I was going to piggyback off what you just said to the last caller. That's why the messaging is so critical. While we must take civics, while we must learn all we can with the political system. People say, well, I don't get paid for that. I say, well, everything can't be generated for money, but I submit to you, you do get paid. If you put the right policies in place, put the right people in place, it comes back tenfold. You'll have livelihood, sustained livelihood. You'll have a job you can report to. It'll make a difference throughout your entire life. I was calling about Neil also and his messaging, saying the loans and how much we're in debt in this country and so on and so forth. It's also subliminally, they are so crafty and so clever, and most of all, they're unified, they're right-wing. And people don't understand that. They are lockstep. They are totally unified.
They're all about money and power, and they know it. Brian, thank you for the call.
And thank you all for being with us these 3 hours today. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow's election day. So get rolling. And don't forget, democracy is not, it just doesn't, you know, spontaneously happen. It's not like Van Leeuwenhoek's mice, you know. Democracy requires you to participate in order to function. So get out there, get active, tag your it. Go to democracyforamerica.com. Go to pdamerica.org. Go to movetoamend.org. There's a lot of great organizations out there. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.